Meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Small Team ePDP Scope Composition Call taking place on Monday, the 9th of July, 2018. On the call today, we have Keith Drazik, Donna Austin, Heather Forrest, Paul McGrady, Susan Kawaguchi, and Stephanie Perrin. We have listed apologies from Marika Konings. From staff, we have Caitlin Tubergen and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all that today's meeting is being recorded and to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes. With this, Donna, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to you at this time. Please begin.
Thanks, Terry, and thanks, everybody, for joining. And hi, Heather, I know it's a little bit late for you. So similar to what we did on Friday, I'll manage the queue and as the best I can. And perhaps, Susan, I think, Caitlin, you might be able to help us out here. I think what's on, no, it's not. So, Susan, I know you provided some comments on Friday. Caitlin, could you just explain what document we have on the screen, please?
Thank you, Donna, certainly. So I believe this document is a document that Marika put together that incorporates all of the comments that had been received. If there are any comments missing, I'm happy to upload emails into the room. There were a couple of comments from Susan that I wasn't sure if they were old or new comments, and I apologize because I just came back into the office today. So I'm not entirely certain, but I do have Susan's comments that I can happily share with the group, Susan, if your comments are
missing. Thanks, Caitlin. Susan, do you want to start with the comments that you made on the mailing list on Friday, I think it was?
Sure, and hopefully, this is Susan for the recording, hopefully to clear something up. I was finding the document really difficult, mainly just because of me, probably. But so in reading, not the document I sent out on Friday, but just the overall scope document, in trying to figure out, you know, what comments were included and what weren't. And so I think I may have put in comments, duplicative comments in that. So I sort of reached out to Marika. She clarified some things. And then I tried to go back and remove some things, but I don't know. So if you've got similar comments, you know, then they may have been similar comments to my that I submitted earlier in the week, last week, on Friday, then we can ignore those. But so in the document, I was trying to figure out some sort of timeline for what I'm calling a staggered approach and not a parallel or a phase two approach. BC is still not comfortable with a phased approach. But so I was trying to figure out a staggered approach and took most of the scoping questions that had to do with the access and accreditation. Some of the questions the BC just do not agree with. And I tried to add other questions into that and figured that, you know, put in my document that I, or the email I submitted on Friday was, you know, look, we need to, obviously these are gating questions. I agree with Keith on that. On a certain set of questions or gating questions, but I think that work can be done on the access and that we shouldn't put in an artificial deadline, or artificial barrier to actually starting the work. Look, if the whole working group says we're not going to do that, then that's a different issue. But I think as scoping the charter that we shouldn't just say, oh, okay, you cannot discuss this until the final report is done. It doesn't have to be part of that initial final report. But at least if there's time and if there's motivation and there's an ability to work on some of the access prior to that initial report being done, as long as those gating questions have been answered, then I think work should start. So I don't have that document in front of me. Maybe, yeah. Thank you. So I just went through and I added in into this document, because I couldn't find them at that point in the scoping document, added in the questions about RDAP plus that the DC submitted. So basically, DC position is, let's don't artificially give a phase two to access, and allow the working group to sort of find their, you know, figure out what they, how much work they can get done. Because if some of the gating questions, if the gating questions are, you know, completed, then, you know, then it could be that the access, work is pretty simple.
Okay, thanks, Susan. I see that Keith is okay with the term staggered instead of phased or parallel. Paul, do you want to go ahead, please?
Yeah, so this is Paul, for the record. I agree with Susan that I think that the phasing is arbitrary. I think that essentially all this, as we've discussed in the past, are three sides now of the same coin, right? Collection, processing, and access, and trying to pull them apart is not going to get everything done that needs to get done within the time frame that it does. My primary concern here is, though, that we're now on document number three or four, and I'm really having trouble following where we are. So we had a charter, and then we had five or six sub-documents, and then everybody made comments into a sub-document on scope. And now we have another document on scope that staff has created. And it's hard for me where the comments are. I think that's where the proposed changes lie, but the comments don't line up with the content. And so it's difficult to see which comment we, you know, relates back to which body text here. And so I'm trying to go through and make sure that all the IPC comments are at least in here somewhere for consideration. But I'm just concerned that we're losing ground by making this more complex than it needed to be. So at some point we need to go through this line by line, I think sooner rather than later. And I'd like to, I guess, have a discussion about which document we should be working off of. I guess that maybe staff can explain why this document is better than the one that everybody put their comments into. And then we can go through this one line by line, or maybe we revert back to the one where everybody put their comments into it, so, you know, we can see it all in one place. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I understand it's challenging, and Marika really tried to provide a document that was reasonably easy to understand and incorporated all the comments, but I understand that this is very much a moving target and it is hard to keep track of it. Keith, I just wonder, because you did the original scope, whether you have a good sense of where we are or not. You know, and Paul, I'm very conscious that I don't think we've actually looked at the IPC comments in any, you know, in any detail. So, Keith, could you kind of give us, you know, your sense of where you are?
So, thanks, Donna. This is Keith. Hi, everybody. So I provided some initial input to the scoping discussion. I think Susan was holding the pen primarily, at least at the beginning, but I provided some input to the scope section related to identifying specific questions that the working group, the EPDP working group, would need to answer associated with the temporary specification language, you know, with an eye towards, you know, the task of the group primarily to certify, to, you know, reject or replace the temporary specification language as consensus policy or not. And so that was the initial focus, was to really focus on the questions related to the temp spec that the group should consider. I think those were a good starting point. I think there were some additional inputs received from various folks that were incorporated. But I think at the end of the day, this question of, you know, temporary approach and then what's in the annex is really sort of the decision that we need to make. And from that, things become more clear. And so in terms of a path forward. And so, Donna, to answer your question, do I have a good handle on where we are today with regard to this specific document? I have to admit I don't. But I do think that if we can answer the question about what Susan has referred to as the staggering of the work, then I think our path forward becomes more obvious. My sense is, and I hear what Susan has said from the BC's perspective, and I think IPC is, you know, Paul said that he agrees, is that there doesn't need to be a so-called arbitrary deadline for the staggering of the work. But I do think it is critical for the working group to be able to focus on the temporary specification, because that's where the deadline is. You've heard me say it before. And make sure that that initial report is published essentially within the next 8 to 10 weeks before Barcelona to be able to meet all of the timelines required. And some of the work there will be the gating questions that will instruct and inform the follow-on work, you know, on the so-called uniform or unified access model and access. But access will be discussed as part of that temporary specification. So I'm not sure that has gotten us any further forward in terms of clarifying where we are, but I really think that, you know, whether it's a date certain or a certain amount of work that's completed, I think those gating questions must be addressed, and I think the focus on the temporary specification initial report is critical. So let me just stop there, see if anybody has any other thoughts.
Thanks, Keith. So I think Ruben's mentioned on the call last week, or maybe it was something that he said in chat. So I think we have some of us have a different view of what's the temporary spec and whether the annex is part of the temporary spec or whether they're two separate documents. And I think, you know, that's an open question. But I hear Susan that she wants, you know, the access questions can still be part of the initial report. But I think what we also need to kind of understand here is that we have the timeline that's associated with the temporary spec, and that's what the registry's registrars are required to comply with at the moment. So that has the 12-month window on it. And then what's in the annex doesn't necessarily fall into that time frame. And then I think how we've established the timeline in the EPDP, we might be able to do that a little differently in, you know, identifying to what Keith is saying with the initial report needs to confirm or not or whatever the temporary specification. And that's the piece that the registry's registrars have to comply with now. And then we also need to account for, you know, if we take the staggered approach, that those things that fall outside that time pressure, you know, what does that timeline look like for the rest of it to be completed? So, Susan, I don't know if that helps with, you know, your expectations of whether you think, you know, if we say staggered, then if the working group or the work team agrees that, you know, we can knock these things off in the initial report for the temporary spec stuff, because there's time pressure in relation to the registries and registrars and their compliance with those efforts. And then there's a separate timeline within the ePDP itself to finalise everything else. Does that, it sounds as clear as to me as I say it, but I just wonder whether I'm making the distinction that I'm trying to make.
So I can't stop myself here, but, and to be absolutely honest with all of this, is there is time pressure on access, because access isn't happening. So I understand you all have contract time pressure, and that's of paramount importance to you, but there is a lot of work that cannot happen because there is no access. And if you start looking around and doing requests for information, you know, which I've been part of as my consulting with Aptitex, there is no access. You know, there's just blanket denials that anything's going to be provided. So that said, and I know you've heard that umpteen times, the other problem we have here is trust. There's absolutely no trust that if access is pushed to the end completely, that we will have a model at all in the next 12 months, and that we will be struggling along and everybody's going to be filing lawsuits probably, or just let a lot of badness happen on the internet. And I know that may not be your day-to-day reality, but that is what I've been seeing in my whole career in domain management, is the badness. So that said, I think if we don't put, you know, if we allow the working group to choose how they're going to work on this, and, I mean, obviously give them some rules. So here's the gating question. But if they happen to get through those gating questions fairly quick, and I'm being very, you know, optimistic, and there are parts of the working group that want to just push forward and work on access, they're not limited by the charter. Because there is hope that this ePDP will just coalesce and agree on a lot of things and get the work done that hasn't been able to be done. And I would hate to see the charter prevent them and, you know, and have a hard and fast rule of, oh, the initial report has to be done. So I guess what I'm saying, let's treat them like adults and let them figure it out.
Okay. So, is Stephanie, your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I don't want to indicate that I'm not in sympathy with Susan's problem. There is a problem there, and it should be driving our motivation to get the initial work. And I will sound like a broken record. I've been saying this since I arrived at ICANN. And now we've got three letters from the data commissioners basically agreeing with me. We first have to get through those questions primordiales before we move on to the matter of access, which is a thing you decide once you've established the purpose, once you've established whether what has been put into this temporary spec is legal, and we have an indication that possibly it might not be compliant yet. So to me, fixing the temp spec, getting those primary questions settled, you cannot do what ICANN has done since the get-go, and namely focus on data access for third parties and make that the question primordial. I hate to keep using that expression, but we don't have a good one in English. the primary question. That has what has perverted, in my view, most of the exercises that we have had addressing who is, and then we don't address the questions that need to be answered first. And that doesn't mean that all access has to stop until such time as the work is done. I don't understand why the registrars are still obliged to give access. The problem is they're not being forced to give illegal access, right? And surely, well, why isn't there any access right at the moment, Susan? I don't get that, because the registrars are obliged by the temporary spec to give access. They could be, let's put it that way, it's better. They could be following the methods that plenty of the the country codes have been doing for years. So, and that can get better without this group addressing a policy to frame it. So, you know, I really think we're setting ourselves up to fail yet again, because if this is in the spec, there will be pressure from day one to answer those questions. And, you know, please don't try and deny that. That will be Paul's job, will be to make sure that access is in every element. And it cannot be that way. It has to be addressed as third-party access to data that is collected by the controllers for the primary purposes. And it, nobody believes me, but you've now heard it echoed by the data commissioner.
Thanks, Stephanie. Keith, I see your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. This is Keith for the record. So I agree with what Stephanie has said, and I also understand what Susan is saying and what Paul is typing in the chat. Look, we have limited time to get this done. We need to finalize this charter. So my suggestion is that if we can all agree on the gating issues or the gating questions that would inform the work of the access discussion, then let's acknowledge that in the charter, let's call that out and just say, rather than, you know, saying it has to be an initial report as the pivot point, let's just say it's the answers to those gating questions of purpose, you know, and legitimate purpose. You know, I don't have them in front of me at the moment, but let's identify the questions that must be answered in order to inform the work of the access discussion. We can't build an access model until the basic questions are answered. So let's call out those basic questions and not put necessarily, as Paul called it, an arbitrary deadline, I think. Let's just say that those things must be answered, put a mark under it, and try to move on. And maybe we can, you know, sort of move this forward. That's my suggestion, compromise suggestion. Let me know if others have thoughts. Thanks.
So, Keith, you're suggesting that that within the scope we specifically call out the gating questions that relate to access, but then the rest is related to the temporary specification itself. Sorry, I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. Yeah, now I'll try to clarify. So, the scope of this EPDP, as we've said from the beginning, or I've said from the beginning, has to be focused on the temporary specification. But in that we're looking at a staggered or a phased approach, whatever we're going to call it, that will include, as part of the charter, the discussions on access. The previous proposal was to basically say that we wouldn't touch the access model design, for lack of a better term, until the initial report was posted on the temporary specification portion. In response to Susan's suggestion, what I'm saying now is that we acknowledge we identify the gating questions that must be answered as part of the temp spec discussion before we actually move into the access model design or discussions, but that it doesn't have to now be pending the publication of the initial report, that we can basically say if once these, you know, 5, 6, 10 questions are answered, these gating questions, then a parallel effort on access can be undertaken. I hope that's more clear. And if not, I apologize.
Thanks, Keith. Paul, I see your hand is up, but I don't know whether there's a
false dichotomy here with the temp spec and the access. I think what we're saying is that there's access is in the temp spec, but there are some questions that need to be answered before the design of that access model can be started. I think that's where the distinction is. Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Donna, and thanks, Keith. I think we need to be careful. I think if we went back and we listened to this, to the recording, you guys would understand where my concerns are. And I don't think that either you, Donna, or Keith are doing this on purpose. But we keep saying things like, after we deal with the temp spec, then we can deal with access. And I don't think that's what you guys mean, and which is why we, at least I keep saying that access is in the temporary specifications, and I'm constantly pointing out the sections where it's where it is. I think what you're trying to do is draw a distinction between what's in the temporary specifications, which we need to answer the questions: are the content that's in the temporary specification about access that we have now? Are we keeping those? Right? We don't. As Susan notes, it's not working, and the only way to deal with that, I guess, is this game of whack-a-mole where not only can you not get access to the information, but you also have to file a compliance report, which adds even more burden to enforcement. But that is access as contained in the temporary specification. If you are assuming that the annex is not part of that. And so we need to make sure that we're careful when we're talking and writing that I think what you guys are saying is that you see gating questions, and then you see dealing with a temporary specification, which includes questions about whether or not the access that is described in the temporary specification should be kept or enhanced. And then there's a third concept of this unified access model that is talked about a bit in the annex, and staff has taken some steps forward on already. So I think let's just not use the word access as a catch-all for concepts in the annex and for what the staff is doing, because access is in the temporary specification. All that to say this, I do think we need to just go through this document and start going through it line by line, making sure that everybody's comments actually made it in here, and see if this team has any concerns about the proposed changes made by anybody. I also think that if we're going to deliver something by Wednesday, we need to look at our calendars right away and see who has time tomorrow to finish this up, because with 30 minutes left, we're not going to get there. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. So I'm just not sure which version of this document. I think you're right, Paul. We need to clean it up, and we need to, start going through it line by line. Paul, I'm very conscious that we haven't had the opportunity to go through the IPC comments. I think, we know where Susan is. Keith, if I'm correct, what we've got on the screen here, there's a note within phase one that says, questions are a gating to phase two. We need to review that language and taken it out or rephrase it in some way. But I think, given what you've said today, I think it's a case of take it out, and perhaps it would be best if we didn't refer to phase one or phase two within the scope. So I think, Keith, I don't know whether you agree with that. But, Paul, we really haven't had the opportunity to talk about the IPC comments, so I wonder if you could take us through those and see where we are on those. And then maybe Caitlin and I can work on something later today to get back to this group. But I think Heather sent a note saying we only have a few hours to the document deadline. So you're right, we do need to try to finalise this as soon as we can. So, Paul, can you take us through the IPC comments?
Sure. Thank you, Donna. And I will do this using the actual red line that we submitted, so I'm sure to capture it all rather than trying to fish them out of the comments here. I've not been able to go through this document and make sure that all the IPC comments made it into these comments. I hope they did. I would have no reason to doubt Marika saying they did. So we'll have to rely on that. I can walk through these real quickly. Let me know if we want to stop and discuss them as I do that, or if I should just introduce them. So the first one was just we, in the mission and scope opening paragraph, we appear to be missing a principle. Why are we doing this? And so the IPC suggested that we add, after ICANN consensus policy, the following language, as is or with modifications in accordance with the mandate to collect data set forth in ICANN's bylaws and the related principle of ensuring continued availability of the WHOIS service to the greatest extent possible and other processing of GTLD registration data while complying with the GDPR and avoiding fragmentation of WHOIS. So that was put out there. I recall Stephanie objecting to this language, indicating that she believes WHOIS is already fragmented. Maybe we could add a word, avoiding to the extent possible fragmentation of WHOIS. Whatever we can do there to assure people. But the bottom line is that, I think the working group will need some principle, and we think the IPC believes that the principle really should be that we should collect and make available WHOIS data to the extent possible without requiring anybody to violate GDPR. And that seems like a sensible principle to us. So that was the proposed change there. At the end of the paragraph, we tacked on the EPDB team shall consider the impact of its responses to these questions on any existing consensus policies, which shall be preserved in accordance with the principle above. In other words, we can't do this in a vacuum. We need to be aware that the decisions made by this working group could affect other consensus policies. And so there's basically a conservation principle here that, to the extent possible, consistent with the principle of, as much collection of data and access as possible without violating GDPR, we should also do our best to not, essentially gut or do away with consensus policies that are already in place. So, again, sort of try to have as small a footprint as possible while we're doing this. Under B1, yeah.
So are people – so that's a kind of an introductory principled statement. Do folks have any fundamental problems with what Paul's explained there? I'd say that the wording is not inconsistent with what's in the temporary specification language and what was trying to be achieved by it. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I don't want to laboriously repeat all the points that I made in my comments. I realize I sound shrill, but I'm sorry if you put into the scoping document a statement like that you're trying to hang on to who is the way it is to the extent possible. It reads no different than all previous efforts. And if everybody thinks, and I heard it on the RDS, I heard it when we brought the data commissioners to ICANN, if you think data commissioners are not going to look at your scoping document and say, oh, right, here we go again, I think it is unnecessary to prejudice a positive response to the results of this work by including a statement that basically says, we're going to try to hang on to the status quo. Just saying it one more time. Paul, I had the points all in my comments on what was wrong with those opening statements.
And sorry, Stephanie, I maybe in trying to piece this all together, I missed those comments, so we might have to bring those back. But Paul, is there, can we take the avoid fragmentation of who is out? Is there some way that we can address that?
Thanks, Donna. So I guess who is in the pro-fragmentation camp, and what are the benefits of fragmentation that I am not thinking of?
Stephanie, is your hand up? Did you want to respond to that? And to Keith's point, I think, you know, it might be best if we do start referring to registration data rather than who is. So, Paul, I think this is going to be a sticking point. So to the extent that you can think about whether this needs to stay in or come out, I think that would be helpful. If you want to move on.
Sure. Thanks, Donna. I still would like to understand what the benefits are of fragmentation. And why we would not be opposed to fragmentation. It's hard to think of reasons to take out something that you've suggested be put in when nobody is able to set forth reasons why it should be out. So, I would love to understand what the benefits of fragmentation of the WHOIS system would be. But I take your point.
Yeah.
So we can move on, but would love, I've been challenged with the job of thinking about taking it out, and so I guess I'll just challenge the team back to explain to me why it's a good thing we have fragmentation.
So okay. I think Stephanie has said that she's responded to that somewhere along the line, so we need to find those and get those to you. Thanks, Paul.
All right. Under question B, collection of data, currently we have it listed as should registrars continue to collect contact data for registrant tech, admin, and billing contact. This is, we don't think a very useful question because people who don't want to collect it will say, no, we shouldn't, and people who do want to collect it should say, yes, you should. And so it comes down to a question, you know, basically it'll be a question about people's preferences rather than, hanging on any sort of, you know, principle or reason. So the IPC suggests that read, is there a legal reason why registrars should not continue to collect contact data for registrant, tech, admin, and billing contacts? We think it's a fair question. If there is a legal reason why they shouldn't, then, you know, the working group will discover it, and that will be very informative. The next question, what data is, yep.
Well, before we go past that, I think, Keith, do you have any response to this? I think there was some comment that we had concerns about legal basis here. But I think in light of the most recent letter from the Data Privacy Board, this is going to be contentious anyway. So, to Paul, to you, what's the difference between legal and, you know, understanding that this is a policy discussion that we're having, you know, what's the distinction? I guess is the question.
The distinction is one upon which a decision can be made. The other one is a collection of, you know, basically of opinion, it's an opinion poll. And so if we're not going to make our decisions in the working group based upon the law, which is, I think, why we're here, right? GDPR is a law. Then we need some other basis to make the decision. It just can't be like a vote. Well, I don't want to, but I want you to, because we're already in that camp where some people want to collect it and other people don't.
Keith, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. Thanks, Paul. Look, at the end of the day, I mean, this question about, admin billing tech information is one of the things that's, you know, under legal consideration now, right? Isn't this the subject of the lawsuit between ICANN and EPAG that was being considered in Germany? So, I mean, I think it's not a question of, in my mind, preference. It's a question of, as Paul described, you know, what is legal, and that is going to be based on the determination of the purpose. It gets us back to the original question of what is the purpose and what is legal to display or to transfer or to provide access to based on that purpose. So, I mean, I don't see that the consideration is wrong, and I take Paul's point, you know, that it needs to be based on sort of the legal interpretation at some point. So I guess it's not clear to me that this would be, you know, a question of preference that some want to collect and then others don't. It's really a question of what is the legal justification and the purpose, and who gets access under those terms.
Okay, thanks, Kate. So we're, in your mind, you're okay with the proposed change by Paul? Okay, Paul, do you want to move forward to the next?
Okay. Thanks. So B2, what data is collected because it is necessary to deliver the service of fulfilling a domain registration versus for other purposes? We wanted to plug in versus the purposes set forth in the temporary specification versus for other purposes. We want to call out the concerns in the temporary specification versus essentially the operational concerns. We think the operational concerns are great. We didn't delete those. So that we think should be a fairly innocent change. Any concerns, questions about that one? And then, so for B3, similar change to B1, is there a legal reason why registrars should not continue to collect all data elements for each contact? Again, we think that's a fairly basic question that needs to be answered. Any concerns with that one?
All right. In C, we have C1. Is there a similar question? Is there a legal reason why registrars not continue to transfer contact data for all contacts to thick registries in accordance with previous consensus policy on this point? Any concerns about this? That's a very similar question. Just again, looking for the. What's the new box that GDPR is, you know, drawn around us? Okay. All right. In E, we have transfer of data from registry to ICANN compliance. We wanted to scratch compliance from that. It's to just make it to ICANN. I think the reason for that will become obvious when we look at the new proposed question. All right. Any concerns about scratching compliance? I think saying ICANN captures its compliance department as well. All right. A new proposed E2. Should ICANN act as the primary manager of the RDDF system? I think that's, is that a typo, or am I just not smart enough? Apologies. Ensuring reasonable access to non-public registration data to authorized outside parties. If yes, how should reasonable access to outside parties be handled prior to ICANN building, implementing such a system? In other words, I think this question gets to, is the solution here to make this ICANN's problem and not everybody else's problem? Could they act as a central hub of all of this and get the contracted parties out of the line of fire? That's the purpose of that question. I assume that will elicit some comments, so I'll be hushed for a moment.
Yeah, so Case, your hand is up, and then Stephanie.
Yeah. Thanks, Donna, and thanks, Paul. This is Keith. So I do have some concerns about this proposed language in that I think it jumps too far ahead for the discussion that we're having, at least as it relates to the you know, the temporary specification. It assumes that I can, could be, and it's not to say that they couldn't be, but I think this, this proposed text or proposed language, is, it really jumps too far ahead, and I think it makes some assumptions that we don't want to make at this point. So I would prefer that this language not be included, referring to ICANN acting as a centralized, source or centralized, manager of, the RDDS data. It's something the group can certainly consider as we get into the later stages of designing an access model, you know, some sort of a interface, but I think it's not appropriate for this part of the charter.
Thanks, Keith. Stephanie, go ahead, please.
Stephanie Perrin, for the record, I'll just simply agree with what Keith said.
So, Paul, are you comfortable to take this out, or?
So my concern about that, Donna, is that earlier we were talking about that we would do a staggered approach and we would eventually get to, at some point, the issues around an access model. So I don't know why. I think it's a valuable question that whoever will be looking at this at whatever staggered stage ultimately is proposed, I don't know why we would take this out. I can see it, I can see us earmarking it as not an initial gating question that necessarily needs to be answered by Barcelona, but just deleting it, I don't think accomplishes much other than taking a concept out of the, you know, an idea out of the forum for discussion. I take Keith's point, perhaps there's a missing question here, you know, could ICANN act as the primary manager for the RDS system, and if so, should ICANN act? So I can see, you know, modifying the question. I can see earmarking this for a later staggered point in the process, but I don't see the benefit of deleting the concept entirely, because it's a potentially a solution, it's a way out of the whole mess. So we'd hate to see it just go away.
I think it's potentially a solution that ICANN doesn't want any part of as well, and they've probably worked very hard to keep themselves out of it. So it is, I see it's particularly contentious in that regard. Perhaps, Paul, could you, you know, have another look at the question in light of the comments from Stephanie and Keith and see if there's some way to rephrase it. But I think there is a fundamental concern with it. So we might need to park that one for now. Do you want to move on to the next one?
Sure. And by the way, just from what I understand, is this idea has been pitched to some ICANN senior staff folks, and I think that there is there wasn't the immediate adverse reaction that one might expect. So I do think it's a concept that's worth keeping in, but we'll move on. You know, and ultimately, you know, it can just go in. It can go into the report back to the main drafting team as something that was suggested, but not. You know, there wasn't consensus to include it, but I do think that ultimately, if we're going to exclude that, we should exclude it. The entire working team should understand that we're not including a potential solution. Our next comment down under J, we have, this is a small thing, but we've tried to go through the document in an uncapitalized uniform access model. Just because I think that may be giving the sense that whole notion is more concrete at this point than it is. You can take that comment or leave it, but I think, you know, if we could, we'd like to have it. We have J2, a new proposed question. Under Section 4 of Appendix A, the temporary specification, what is meant by reasonable access to non-public data and what criteria must contracted parties be obligated to consider in deciding whether to disclose non-public registration data to an outside party requester? who determines the scope and method for reasonable access and the specific criteria for such access? What are the criteria for determining if a legitimate interest of the outside party outweighs the interest of the registrant, and what criteria need to be considered to determine if the legitimate interest of the outside party overridden by the interest of or fundamental rights or freedoms of the registrant? What are exemplar scenarios for each of the foregoing? So sort of this gets to the heart of, comparing the legitimate interest of the outside party making the request versus the fundamental rights or freedoms of the registrant. So we think that's an important question to ask. I'll stop and wait for comments on that.
So Stephanie, I see your hand is up, and then Keith.
I just want to point out that attempting to get around the individual circumstances of the request and the nature of the request, we've had answers from the DPAs on this. You can't have a one-size-fits-all situation by hauling up the concept of public interest as generally overruling the rights of the individual. So that means that we are going to have to come up with specific types of inquiries. So claiming, you know, child molestation and all the other terrible things that happen as if it applies to every circumstance will not work. So that is why it's going to take us quite a while to figure out an implementation model that takes advantage of the articulated capabilities of RDAP. And quite frankly, trying to put that language into the spec, you know, overruling public interest, just isn't going to work. We've got that in writing from the DPA, so let's not try to put it in here. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie. Case.
Okay. Thanks, Donna. So I do have some concerns about the inclusion of the J section, especially J6, I think. I think, again, this jumps pretty far ahead in terms of some assumptions, and I don't think it recognizes the importance of the gating questions that we've described, specifically around the need to come up with, a tiered access approach as instructed by the DPAs that recognizes what Stephanie has described, I think, is, you know, sort of the fact that these individual use cases and requestors of data are going to be on a spectrum or a range, or there's going to be a number of different approaches. There's no way at this point for unified access model or uniform access model, and I do agree with the decapitalizing that term. I think that's helpful, but I think that we need to be very cautious in terms of including this level of language in the charter. I think we need to focus first and foremost on the questions of coming up with the clear definitions of use, legitimate use, based on the various types of requests. Thanks.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks, Stephanie. So, Paul, in light of those comments, do you have any initial reactions?
Well, so the Keith comments seem to be about J6, which I haven't read yet, and so I don't really know if Keith is suggesting that all the IPC suggestions here under Section J should not be included, or if it was just J6, what's being suggested?
Thanks, Paul. This is Keith again, and I'm looking at the document on the screen, and I don't actually see the suggested language. I'm going to have to go back to the other document.
Yeah, so I mean, I read J2. I'm happy to read the remaining. With the note that we have 4 minutes left, or we can stop here and take this up. I think maybe we should spend the last 4 minutes looking at our calendars to see if we can find a time to resume this tomorrow, and we can begin with J3 and walk the rest of the way through this. Ultimately, I think that there needs to be some questions in here about access if we're going to have a staggered approach I just did what I said we shouldn't do. We should have some questions in here about an access model, if we're going to have a staggered approach in which an access model is considered. We can't just eliminate any questions having to do with the proposed access model and hope that the working group gets there on their own without us asking them to get there. But I think we can take that up in the next call. Should we – I apologize for trying to, you know, ask for us to move on to the quick housekeeping issue of the calendars, but I really think we should do that and see if we can get some more time.
So, Paul, it's a good point. Keith, your hand is up. Is that an old hand or?
It's an old hand. Thanks, Donna.
Okay, thanks. So I wonder, would folks be available for a call the same time tomorrow? Keith, a yes?
I could be, but I don't know where everybody is in the world, but an hour earlier would be far better.
Okay. Susan? So, Keith and Stephanie, can you do an hour earlier? Okay, that's a yes. Stephanie? Okay. So we can do, everyone can do an hour earlier tomorrow morning. So let's commit to that. What Caitlin and I can work on in the meantime is try to review this document to take into consideration the discussion we had earlier. So, Keith, I want to confirm that you're okay with removing that language that relates to phase one and phase two. Because I think that's what we've agreed to. I don't think we're going to use the word staggered, but I think there's an intention there to soften that a little bit. Go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. In the interest of moving this forward, citing the concerns raised by Susan about trust and all of that, and recognizing that access is important, I'm okay with removing references to phase one and phase two, provided there is a clear recognition and call out in the charter of the gating questions. So subject to agreement on the gating questions, I can live with the removal of phase one and phase two. But I do want to point out that this is a significant departure from the initial positions of certainly the contracted parties in terms of looking at the need to focus on the temp spec and the EPDP. And I know that NCSG was also concerned about, you know, having this tied into the same process. So I think it's just important to note that for the record. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Keith. So bearing in mind what Stephanie's just said, if, you know, we can get the relevant documents out, including one with all the comments. So Caitlin and I will try to work on that this morning. So we can get those documents to you. We'll also work on a revised draft based on the conversations we've had today to see if we can get some agreement on that too. So does that work for folks? And we'll get a call set up for tomorrow morning. Okay. All righty. Thanks, everybody, for getting on the call today. And we'll try to get something back to you later on today. And noting that we still need to try to wrap this up pretty, as soon as we can, because we have to get this back to the drafting team and we have a document deadline, so that the motion, I assume, will be put out again later today. So thanks, everybody.
Okay. Thanks, Donna.
Thanks, Donna. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.